This is Real Estate Rookie episode 221.
Just realizing life is one big lagging effect. Everything that you have today is a result of what you did 5-10 years ago. So you're not going to get anything immediately. So start taking small actions to make a difference in your life 5-10 years from now. Just suck it up. Realize it's not going to be easy, or it could be fun, but it's not going to be easy to get where we are. If you want to put in the time, not to say we've fully made it, but we've done really, I personally think we've done really well.
My name is Ashley Kerr, and I'm here with my co-host, Tony Robinson.
And welcome to the Real Estate Rookie Podcast, where every week, twice a week, we bring you the inspiration, information, and amazing stories you need to hear to kickstart your investing journey. And I oftentimes like to start our episodes with some kind reviews that the other listeners have left for us. So this review comes from Marianne. And Marianne says, "Great show, all caps, exclamation marks," and goes on to say, "I really enjoy the show. After listening to a few episodes, I was totally hooked. It has great direction. It deals with very instructive and interesting topics. I really love this program." So Marianne, we appreciate you. And for all of you that are listening and have listened, if you haven't yet, please do leave an honest rating and review on whatever platform it is you're listening to. The more reviews we get, the more folks we can help and help them kickstart their investing journey. So with that out of the way, Ashley Kerr, let's get into some boring banter. Let me know what's going on in your life these days.
Well, first of all, I want to say thank you to everyone that has left us a great review. It really does like warm our hearts and make us feel so happy and motivate us to bring you guys even more great content. So thank you to everyone who has taken the time to leave a review for us. We appreciate it. So we are actually recording this the end of June. So this is not going to air for a while. So I feel like things are going to change so much over the summer, but Tony is going overseas for a while. So we've had to stock up on our recordings. I'm going to a lake house this summer for a weekend. Tony's traveling the world. So Tony, back to you.
Yeah. So we actually take off. I think we have one more recording and then I'll be gone for almost 2 weeks. We're going to Italy for the first time. So my son graduated from junior high. We thought it'd be a cool like trip to take before he starts high school. So we're landing in Rome, then we're going to Venice, and then we'll finish off in like the Amalfi Coast area. So we'll see a little bit of everything in Italy. It'll be fun.
I've already sent some stills and some headshots so I can be photoshopped into every family group photo on this trip.
Ash is going to be photoshopped along with this everywhere we go.
Well, today we have Brandon Rush on the show. Brandon is a house hacker currently out of Connecticut, and he is going to talk to you guys about how he did his research and how he got started into house hacking, but most importantly, why he chose house hacking. We'll go into the numbers of how he made it work and how it has benefited him and his wife and completely changed their lives.
Yeah. And Brandon lives in Portland, which is not Portland, Oregon or Portland, Maine. Like I just learned today, there's a Portland, Connecticut. So, but he's got a really cool story about how he was willing to move almost an hour away and pretty much just like upend his life to start his real estate investing journey. And everyone always talks about the units and there's a lot of, sexiness around how big your portfolio is, but people always often overlook the hard work that goes into getting there. And I thought Brandon did a really good job of highlighting some of the sacrifices he and his wife has made to put themselves in a position so that he actually just recently left his job a month ago. And that's because of the sacrifice he was willing to make.
Remember when you had to pay to get a lead's phone number? It was like the dark ages. Until Deal Machine made skip tracing a thing of the past. Now, with your Deal Machine plan, you'll get unlimited access to phone numbers and contact information for no extra cost. That's right, get high quality, reliable information trusted by leading financial institutions, all fully compliant with the federal Do Not Call list. Explore over 150 data points, including age, gender, marital status, occupation, and a ton more. Trust me, this is the data you need for off-market deals. With new filters, people flags, and color-coded phone numbers, lead management just got a ton easier. Ready to step up your investing game? Sign up for a Deal Machine plan today and gain immediate access to this unlimited treasure trove of contact information and phone numbers. Just head to dealmachine.com/BP. Transform your lead generation and deal-making strategies with Deal Machine. Sign up today and start exploring the unlimited possibilities at dealmachine.com/BP.
Are current interest rates making you depressed about cash flow? What if it didn't have to be that way? Rent to Retirement has 2.99% seller financing available on turnkey properties. You heard that right. That's a seller financed 2.99% interest rate where the average cash flow is over $900 per month. They also have options where you can put as low as 5% down on multiple investment properties with no PMI. Rent to Retirement is the nation's leading turnkey investment company that understands what it takes to be successful in today's dynamic real estate market. Their reputation speaks for itself with more five-star reviews than any other company on the BiggerPockets website. Rent to Retirement offers fully turnkey properties that are newly built or renovated, leased and managed, allowing you to invest with confidence in the markets that offer the best returns. To learn more, visit renttoretirement.com. That's renttoretirement.com. Or text REI to 33777. Again, text REI to 33777.
Remember when you had to pay to get a lead's phone number? It was like the dark ages. Until Deal Machine made skip tracing a thing of the past. Now, with your Deal Machine plan, you'll get unlimited access to phone numbers and contact information for no extra cost. That's right, get high quality, reliable information trusted by leading financial institutions, all fully compliant with the federal Do Not Call list. Explore over 150 data points, including age, gender, marital status, occupation, and a ton more. Trust me, this is the data you need for off-market deals. With new filters, people flags, and color-coded phone numbers, lead management just got a ton easier. Ready to step up your investing game? Sign up for a Deal Machine plan today and gain immediate access to this unlimited treasure trove of contact information and phone numbers. Just head to dealmachine.com/BP. Transform your lead generation and deal-making strategies with Deal Machine. Sign up today and start exploring the unlimited possibilities at dealmachine.com/BP.
Brandon, welcome to the show. Thank you so much for joining us. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got started in real estate?
Yeah, sure. So my name is Brandon Rush. I currently reside in Portland, Connecticut. Started out life in New York City, in Queens, New York. Long story short, lived a fun life growing up, very active, sports all over the place, very somewhat early entrepreneurial skills that I had within myself, such as shoveling snow, packing bags, doing all whatever I can to make a dollar without having to ask my parents for it was my thing when I was a kid, and that carried over into through life. Started an IT career, typical thing. Went to school, started an IT career, did that for about 12 years. And kind of the summary of it, my wife and I decided at one point that we found out about real estate, dug into the books like everyone else, bigger pockets, went deep, and decided that house hacking was how we're going to start. So it all got started with that first house hack in Connecticut. And since then, we've acquired a few more properties. And here we are now, house hacking in our fourth family here in Portland.
Brandon, before we go too much further, can you just tell us what those other properties are and just a brief overview of your portfolio?
Sure. So currently my wife and I own three multis, two triplexes and a quad. All three are located in Connecticut, and we've house hacked two of them. So a total of 10 units.
Well, first of all, congratulations. Amazing. I want to know, why did you choose house hacking? Why was that the first step, the first real estate strategy that you're going to do? What made you make that decision?
And Brandon, if you can, for those that aren't familiar with house hacking, just like define that phrase for us as well.
Sure, for sure. So house hacking is basically using your residence to make money. It could be either renting out rooms to other individuals. It could be, as we're doing, renting out multifamilies, renting out the other apartments. It could also be utilizing the space that you have in your yard, for storage, or space in your, it's really just utilizing the space that you have to make money. And how we got started with house hacking, what made us decide, it was really a numbers thing, to be honest. When we first got started out, I read a book by Chip and Joanna Gaines, and that's kind of how it got started. I believe it was called Magnolia Story. And that kind of got me started with, living in a buying properties. Chip was talking about buying properties on a street, and I said, this is very interesting. I think this is going to be how we do it. And I've always, deep down inside, been looking up a way out of the rat race, to be honest. That was really my motivation, and it just clicked once I read that book. I ran back home and just started running the numbers, and then I started getting deeper into Rich Dad Poor Dad, the book on house hacking. And then once you do the numbers and you realize, it's so much cheaper just to just multifamily house hack or house hack in general than to own a single family. So that's kind of how we got started. Sorry, it's a little bit all over the place, but yeah.
No, that's great. I just love to hear as to why people make the decision as to what strategy they're going to start with.
Sure.
So with your house hacking, what was the first property that you purchased, and what did that look like? Did you have any kind of analysis paralysis? Was it like, okay, day one, we're doing this, we're buying a duplex, and day two, you have the duplex?
Yeah, sure. So to be honest, it took us about 8 months from beginning to end to acquire that first multifamily. It first started actually by, we owned, to kind of take it back, we owned a single family prior to moving into our triplex. So we lived in a single family for 3 years. So the first hurdle was us coming to terms that we need to get out of this house and sell it. The second part was us then deciding where we're going to move. That was hard because of the market we were in. It was Upper Fairfield County, Connecticut. So it was relatively expensive, and we were looking at cash flow numbers, and they didn't quite work for what we wanted to do. But we were committed. Like, we had to do something. There was no stopping us. So we decided we're going to move an hour away and commute back and forth to work at that point in a three-family. In terms of numbers, after that, you know, the properties got significantly cheaper. The first property was listed for $223,000. I think they did that just to get prices running. This is 2020. We offered $286,000 for it. We didn't get it at first, but we followed up with our agent and said, hey, could you check back in? And turns out we were able to get that property after a month or two after it went under contract with someone else. So we lucked out just by following up. And that was our first house hack, $223,000, $286,000 offer, got accepted. And yeah, the rest is history.
So if I can dive in a little bit, Brandon. So you guys, you're saying a lot of things, but I feel like you're kind of glossing over some of the sacrifices that you guys made, right?
Yeah.
So you move an hour away, you decide to do this house hack, you give up this single family space that's just yours. Talk us through why you felt that was the right decision and how you were able to overcome, like, any, I don't know, hesitation you guys might have felt with, you know, upheaving this life that you've already built, this house you already had, and going ahead. Like, that's like a big sacrifice. So just walk us through your psyche in that moment.
I would say for me, it was a bit easier, as you know, for my wife, not as much, but she came to terms. A lot of it is just thinking about, if we had started 10 years ago, where would we be now? That always circles back in my head. If you had done this 10 years ago, where would you be? And I reminded myself, 10 years from now, if you don't do this, what's going to be your excuse for not starting? And it was really as simple as that. It's just, I, you know, and you look at the path in life, all right, my options are to sit here, you know, stay in my W-2, continue to make money. It's great, but where is the end? You know, where's the end of the tunnel on this? And I didn't see the end of the tunnel for me personally. Me working to 65 and retiring off of that just was not an option. So we said, you know what? Age is not a factor. We're just going to do this now, and we will reap the rewards of this in 10 years, whatever it may be. So let's just get started now. And that's really what it was. It's just me pushing myself and just moving forward.
Yeah, Brandon, that's really amazing, man. And I think so many people who have the idea of wanting to become a real estate investor, they're not always willing to make maybe the sacrifices that are necessary to really kickstart that journey that they want to go on. But for you, that, I don't want to say I guess the idea of being, you know, this kind of corporate slave for the next 30, 40 years was impetus enough to make you make that decision. So, I mean, can you tell us right now, Brandon, like, what are you doing for work? Are you still working in a W-2 job? Or what does your day-to-day look like on the work side?
All right. So I don't want to go too deep into it, but long story short, I left my full-time role of 13 years in IT about a little over a month ago, actually. So now I'm a full-time real estate agent.
Congratulations.
Yeah.
Thank you. That's awesome, Brandon.
And a lot of it does, I would say 90% of it comes from what we decided 2 years ago that allowed me to be in this position now. If I had stayed with the house, with the car payment, it would have just been too heavy to afford to do what we're doing now. So I want to say we've reached financial freedom level 0.5 is where we are now based on the changes that we made. And this is honestly with us making less money. It's crazy. We're making less money, you know, but we've made sacrifices that it just balances out. It's all numbers. And we're in a much better place than we were 2 years ago.
Brandon, one other thing you mentioned that I really want to like drill down on that I thought was really insightful. You said you and your wife kept saying, what if we had started 10 years ago? Like, how different would things be? But then on the flip side, and I think that's a question that a lot of people ask, right? A lot of adults will ask that question, like, man, why didn't I start this 10 years ago? But on the flip side, you said, well, where will we be if we don't start today, 10 years from now? And I think like flipping the question around that way is like, it was just really cool, right? Because it kind of eliminates all the you know, beating yourself up for not doing it. And it's like, okay, but today is today. We still have the next 10 years. Let's make the most of it. So, man, I really, really love your frame of mind there. So one other sacrifice I want to point out, and you kind of glossed over this as well. You said that you guys have had three different house hacks.
Two house hacks. Sorry. We bought one in between. I'm sorry. We bought one investment property out.
Okay.
Out, yeah.
Oh, gotcha. Okay. So one of them was an investment property. The other two were house hacks.
Right.
Still, that's a lot of moving, right? Because you guys had your single family house, then you went to your first house hack, then you went to your second house hack. Talk us through like picking up and packing and moving your life. I mean, how much time is in between those moves and what has that been like?
Yeah. So one thing we learned quickly is having a single family, you collect a lot of junk. It's just straight up, it's junk. So it's funny. One of our last pitches before we left our single family was us sitting with our little outdoor table with our two seats, because that's all we had left for to eat dinner on. And it's really about traveling lightly, to be honest. Like one of the hesitations they'll have with house hacking is, what am I going to do with all this stuff? And we realized that quickly. We have so much stuff. And to make our lives easy, we literally just put it on the lawn, post a Facebook marketplace. Anything worth under $50, we just gave it away. Which was a lot of our stuff. And we sold a lot. And we purchased a lot of lightweight furniture to make it easier for the move or the moves. so we just knew, like, and it's having a lot of stuff. We also, it makes it mentally heavy on you when you have lots of just stuff to think about. And we had a lot to think about at that time. So getting rid of stuff kind of freed up our mind to think about the bigger picture and where we were going with our lives.
Brandon, now that you've, you know, invested a little bit, you are in a sense financially free. What would be some advice that you would give to someone who is you on day one? You, somebody who wants to have what you have, be able to leave their W-2 job, house hack, have an investment property. What would be like your action items, things that they can do today to prepare themselves to get to your point, maybe even faster than you did?
Sure. I would say start to surround yourselves with like-minded individuals. One of the biggest challenges with doing what I do is talking to people who don't understand the reason why we're doing it. You will easily get talked out to anyone you walk down the street and say what you're doing. Oh my God, how do you deal with tenants? I can never live with tenants. It's just mumbles. But these same people are the ones that are in severe debt and barely making it, but they don't want to, you know, give up these small comforts that they have. So I would say, one, surround yourself with like-minded individuals. Another I would say is delayed gratification. Like, just realize in life is one big lagging effect. Everything that you have today is a result of what you did 5-10 years ago. So you're not going to get anything immediately. So start taking small actions to make a difference in your life 5-10 years from now. Just suck it up. Realize it's not going to be easy, or it could be fun, but it's not going to be easy to get where we are. If you want to put in the time, not to say we've fully made it, but we've done really, I personally think we've done really well. And the last tip I would have is, watch your finances. A lot of time finance, we're very diligent with our finances on a monthly basis. And we literally have family meetings and we look at where are we this month without, you know, how come we're down $5,000 or up $5,000? What made that change? And, you know, I forgot what the term is, but what you track, you know the term. Basically, if you track it, it's
yeah,
you know the term. But it gets better if you track your expenses. You realize that there's something you're doing that's bringing them down, or there's something you're doing that's bringing them up, and maybe you need to do more of that, whatever that may be. So definitely the third one I say is track your expenses. And
Brandon, one of the things you mentioned was that, you know, it's hard to find people that understand what you're doing and why you're doing it, especially the idea of living with tenants. And for me, when I think about house hacking, that's always one of my biggest like concerns as well, is like, man, living next door to my tenant, like what kind of quality of life am I signing myself up for? So have you been self-managing your units? And if so, kind of walk us through what that journey's been like for you and maybe some of the lessons you learned there as well.
Yeah. So, probably one of the most interesting parts of house hacking, also in Class C neighborhoods, which is where we started. So it's definitely a fun dynamic. I would say, I'm trying to think where we start with that. You know, you're living with your tenants. You have to have expectations right from the start of these are people. The first thing is, these are people, they're renters. They're not going to care for your property the way you care for it. That's one thing I learned quickly. I saw them, you know, there's trash here, there's trash in the backyard, there's their friends hanging out. But you have to realize these people don't own this place. And you also have to realize the class of neighborhood you were in. You know, it's a lot of it's a rental market like where we are. So that's one thing I would say. I don't say lower your expectations, but this is not going to be your single family you had or we had and where you could walk and say hi to your neighbors. It's a different dynamic.
Do they know you're the owner? Do they know you're the owner, the tenant?
Yeah, you know, I live on the edge. I'm kind of a risky person. So I just straight up say I'm the owner and end of conversation. I'll see you later. You know, it's just one of the things I never really thought too much about. Maybe when we grow more, I will hopefully not have to stop saying that because I won't be house hacking at some point. But right now it's just one of those things I just don't want to think much about. So I just tell them I'm the owner. And I also feel like having that relationship with them does help, you know, you being responsible, speaking with them, treating not like necessarily like a friend, but like a client of yours that you're respectful of and giving them what they need, it creates a different level of care for the property as well. A lot of my tenants, they care for the property as if it's truly their property. So I never really have problems with, you know, just destruction or anything like that. So I have a really good relationship with my tenants. They do talk a lot when we show up. I give them their time.
Can you talk us through that? So like you say they talk a lot. Well, I guess first let me ask this, Brandon. Were they inherited tenants?
I would say about half of my tenants that I have now were inherited and half were not. Half are new that we brought
okay.
in. Yes.
So the ones that you inherited, can you walk us through that initial conversation? Like you say, hi, I'm Brandon, I'm the new owner. And where does the conversation go from there?
Sure. So I had grabbed all the information from the previous owner, phone numbers, you know, their leases and whatnot. And it started with a phone call from me personally saying, hey, this is Brandon Rush. I'm the new owner. I'm going to be on site. Next week, you know, I could be there whenever you're there. I'd love to meet with you just to introduce myself and kind of go over not the ground rules, but I always say things in a nice way, but just the ground rules of how things are going to operate moving forward. And, you know, generally, they'll be okay. When you meet with them, they're a bit hesitant. They're very quiet. They kind of don't know what to expect. I think a lot of them think they're just going to tell them, hey, I'm kicking you out or I'm raising your rent $3,000. But it was really none of that. And it's just, you know, in a respectful but authoritative way, I tell them this is what's going on. You know, I purchased the property. I'm the new owner. This is how you contact me. This will be your new rent, assuming that they were month to month. This will be your new rent moving forward. I'll give you a month or two to think about it. I never want to just make it so immediate and scary to them that they feel like they have to run away from it. So I give them a little bit of time. And, you know, I tell them, you know, we're going to sign a new lease. So I never really talk about rules too much because a lot of that will be in the lease. You know, I just kind of set general expectations to keep the place safe and to let them know where they can reach me. And I leave it at that. Really is when we get to the leases where we get down to business and we say, these are the rules, you know, so you're signing or you're not signing.
How do you keep the tenants from knocking on your bedroom window saying my toilet is not working?
Not even on the door, but on the bedroom window.
The bedroom window. There, I remember we had a guest on a long time ago that bought a mobile home park and it had like an apartment complex on it. And he was moving into one of the units and the person that owned it previously had lived there and the tenants would come knock on his window if they had a maintenance request. Like that was the old owner's procedure. So he had to train the tenants to not do that for him. But Brandon, how do you prevent that? And do you have like a procedure in place that they know to follow? So it doesn't come to that.
Yes. So we do use you asked the question before. So for our property management, we do use Tenant Cloud as our property management platform. But the way I eliminate that is I set expectations from the start. I say, these are the ways to communicate with me only. It's either through a text message or a voicemail. Please do not knock on my door. I am not going to answer the door. If I do answer the door, you're there. I'm going to close the door and text you and say, please text me your problem. And they get it from the start. And if they do it, which I actually never had anyone knock at, maybe one time there was an emergency and someone did knock on the door, which was warranted. But you just set the expectations from the start and you stick to them. If they do it, you don't just give up and just walk downstairs and help them out.
Brendan, I always wonder with the house hacks, like about the leasing or creating the lease agreement, because I feel like if it's a property where I'm like sharing walls with tenants, I feel like I would be even more strict with like what my lease is and how I'm screening these tenants. So two questions for you. Did you create your own lease or did you find someone, you know, some floating online or even from Bigger Pockets? And then B, what was your tenant screening process like to make sure you weren't, you know, living next to maniacs?
Yeah. So, I guess the first part with the lease, so my lease is basically a mishmash of my own personal, what I want, because you're the boss, so you can, within the law. So a lot of it is, what do we want? So if there's any kind of parking restrictions, we want to give ourselves more spots, anything like that, we put that in first. And then after that, I have a pretty good network, so I've reached out and say, hey, could you send me a lease? I know the property management sent me theirs. This person sent me theirs. I kind of took time to mesh it up to what makes the most sense and what's fair, but also, you know, relatively strict at the same time that would eliminate any kind of problems. And then I pass it to an attorney to review it just to make sure that it's legit and I'm not, you know, breaking any laws. And that's how we did it. And I'm sorry, what was your second question? I'm sorry about that.
No, that's totally fine. Because one more follow-up on the lease agreement. So you mentioned like the additional parking spaces that you'd like. Are there any other things you feel like that you've added in that have, you know, made it easier for you as the landlord?
I would say anything that can make my life easier, like methods of payment. I only allow payment electronically or through personal check. There's no cash, there's no money orders. I would say quiet hours, you know, things like that, which within the law, you know, after 9 or 10 o'clock, whatever the law is, things like that, things that make me comfortable, me and my wife comfortable living there and make our lives easy is really what I'm trying to put in the lease.
Trying to accomplish. So then the follow-up question was, what's your screening process? Like, how are you making sure you don't have, you know, Jack Nicholson from what's the movie where he went crazy? Well, I can't think of it right now. The Shining. Moving in next year. Yeah.
To speak on that, the first thing is, unfortunately, we're all crazy. You never know who's going to walk in the door. They could have the best credit. So it kind of sucks, but you can still vet to hopefully eliminate that. I would say Bigger Pockets, listen to podcasts. I've kind of collected all these different criteria that others have used, such as three times the, your income. What is it? Three times the rent is what you bring in monthly. That's definitely a big one. Credit scores, I a lot of times in my criteria, I put preferable, not necessarily required, just to cover myself, because a lot of times in classy neighborhoods, you won't get somebody with a 650 credit score, but they may fall in at a 625 or a 600. So, and it's all the other general stuff, you know, landlord checks from previous landlords, verification of income is definitely what I require. And a lot of it is just visually watching the tenants as they're walking through that's one of my criteria. I don't know if that's illegal or not, but I do it. And it's not discriminating. It's just seeing the vibe when they do open houses. So I only allow people to apply if they come through my open house. And it's, you know, you just want to watch out for the ones that are just very needy right from the start. And you're just like, oh, what about this? What about this? Oh, that's ugly. Oh, this is just like, no, this is not going to work, because, you know, you're going to be a super needy tenant. I just don't have time.
Brendan, are you rehabbing any of these properties, or are they pretty much turnkey that you're purchasing?
All have been relatively turnkey. You know, we have one that's, I'd say they're all, you know, early 1900s houses, so they're not renovated. So there's still small rehab that we've had to do, like turn a unit, but nothing significant. We kind of knew what we were getting into from the start with a lot of these properties, and they're small projects like, you know, replacement of deck boards and replacement of doors and things like that we've kind of hired out little by little over time, but nothing significant.
Gotcha. So one other thing I want to hit, Brandon, and you've mentioned this a couple of times, is how your network has played a role. You talked about getting your lease, you leaned on some other investors, and you know, there's some people in your life you can't talk to about why you're doing this house hacking strategy, but you have other investors that know why and can see it. So I'm just curious, like, what steps have you taken to kind of build your network?
Yeah. It all started, honestly, with my local RIA. You know, when we were back in our single family, we started out by driving an hour out to those meetings once a month. And just getting, you know, submerged in the business and how it all works. And from there, I just realized, like, your network is your net worth, as they say. So starting to collect cards from these people and then realizing, like, even from the start, oh, I had this problem. I need an attorney. Oh, I had this attorney's card from this meetup I went to. I could reach out. And then it clicked with me, like, just start networking like crazy because all the resources you need are all out there. You just got to find, you just got to be out there. And after a while, it'll become so easy that all you have to do is, I label all my contacts like agent, lawyer, you know, plumber. So literally I just jump into my contacts and say, oh, I got a leak, plumber in my contacts. You get five of them, knock it out. And it just becomes so easy after you know so many people.
Can you just say what a RIA meetup is and how would someone find one?
Got it. So a RIA is, I believe it stands for real estate. Oh my God, I should know what RIA stands for. Real estate. IA.
Investment Association.
Here we go. Sorry. I just.
I don't know. I'm guessing. I've heard of RIA, but
that sounds about right.
For sure. Yeah.
I've never actually, like, from the start, never actually went. But yeah. So RIA is a local organization. Usually, definitely every state, I believe, has a RIA. And then there's local, you know, there may be small localities that have RIAs as well. But a RIA is an organization that basically teaches you about real estate, provides the fundamentals on real estate, provides the network opportunities on real estate within your market. So it's very common to have RIAs of 50 to 100 people. It's one of the most common meetup platforms or organizations you should have in your localities, wherever you are.
Okay, awesome. I want to get into our deal review. So do you have a property that you want to share with us?
Sure. Okay. Honestly, I think the first one is probably the best. It'll always be the best.
Okay. Well, I'm going to ask you some rapid fire questions and then we can kind of go into the story of it. So what type of property was this?
So this was a 3-family in New Britain, Connecticut.
And what was the strategy you were using with it?
Just use our savings, go 20% down and live in it. It was really straightforward for this one. We had to find a property that we can live in. That was the hardest part because there were no properties at the time when COVID kicked in.
And the plan was to hold this property even after you were no longer living in it?
Correct. Yeah. The plan was to live in it for 1 year and move on to the next.
And what was the purchase price?
The purchase price was $286,000.
Okay. And did you do any rehab, put any money into it?
We did have to turn one unit. We did it ourselves, so it was cheap money-wise, but it was very expensive time-wise.
Yeah. And did you go and get this property refinanced at all, or have you kept the original loan on it with the 20% down?
Yeah, so we haven't pulled a refinance, but we did pull a HELOC.
Oh.
A buddy of mine through my network said, hey, your property probably, appreciated a bit over the last, you know, year and a half. You should consider a HELOC while you can. It turns out, you know, there was, I think a little over 40 or 50 grand in equity in the property. And we now have a HELOC. So, yeah.
Well, do you want to kind of go into the story starting off with how you actually found the deal?
Sure. So it was an MLS deal, actually. So no off-market, nothing special, just my wife and I looking every day at the realtor.com alerts that come in. And this one popped up. I think for us, leaving the single family, it would have been hard for us to take a property that needed a significant amount of work. So the balance was finding something that needed not a lot of work that was still relatively nice to live in. So we did find a property that was relatively nice to live in. On EMLS, it was a 3-bed. I mean, well, it's a triplex, but our specific apartment that we were in was a 3-bed, 1-bath. So it gave us a space that we needed to kind of feel like it's kind of a home instead of like a 1-bed crunched in the corner. So it was a triplex that we basically found the MLS, paid $286 for it. 3 beds per floor. That was the first purchase.
How was your excitement the day you closed on that? Like making this transition, like going from single family to house hacking, and like you already know you are just going to accelerate your, you know, financial freedom. What was that like for you and your wife?
It was exciting. You know, it knowing that next month that $1,500 mortgage we were paying is pretty much gone. It was like, I don't care what else happens. Like, we are saving, you know, roughly $1,500 a month now. Like, to me, it's like freedom. It was freedom immediately. You know, it's the most free I felt in my life in a long time, without the weight of these obligations of a mortgage and all the other stuff that comes with the house. So, you know, and then it, you know, I would say a little bit of that quickly went away with, you know, realizing, oh, there's people living here with us that we have to kind of manage. So we forgot about that part, but it all worked out. It all worked out.
Hey, I would manage two tenants for $1,500 a month. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. One follow-up question to that, Brandon. In terms of like choosing the right property, what did your analysis process look like? And what was it about this specific triplex that made you say, okay, this house is worth, you know, whatever, $280,000?
Sure. So the analysis involved a BiggerPockets calculator. I still to this day have hundreds of them at this point done. That was probably number 101, because they say to, you know, do 100 before you get into it. Yeah. It was based on comps is how we came up to our valuation of the property. We looked at what other triplexes in that area sold for roughly, and we kind of stuck to our numbers. You know, we offered about maybe $6,000 over what others appraised for. We felt it was worth, just to kind of give us an edge, and it worked. And the other part of the evaluation was what the rents would bring in for that property. And looking at what the rents were bringing in, we weren't too concerned with like, oh, we're going to cash flow $2,000, $3,000, you know, whatever dollars. We were more concerned with how do we get rid of that $1,500 mortgage that we're paying every month, and also making sure the property's covered once we leave. Those were our two main criteria. And this property did that and a little bit more. You know, it actually paid us, I think once you ran the numbers truly, operation $82 a month we were profiting and netting. So
there you go.
I can't complain.
So was this one of the properties where you inherited tenants, or did you have to go out and screen folks to fill those other two units?
We on this property, we inherited tenants. Today, we actually have two new tenants in that building, one still remaining that's inherited. But we had to bring in two new tenants since having that building. We had an issue with one of the tenants. It was COVID, not paying, low income tenant. Couldn't afford to keep up, and we worked it out. That was the first tenant who left, and we were able to you know, go through the process like we talked about with vetting a new tenant and bringing a new tenant in. And after we left, we were able to bring a new tenant out into our unit.
Brandon, knowing what you know now, what would you have done differently negotiating with that tenant that stopped paying? Or would you have done the exact same thing, and what was that process?
I think I would have done the exact same thing I did, which was, you know, when you get into situations, you can't fight it, you know, because this, your control is limited. I would say the options are very limited. Someone who can't pay rent, you can't force them to pay rent. So the next best case is how can you work with them to get them out in a very nice way versus a forceful way, which a lot of people would kind of go that route. What we did basically is rental assistance. You know, through my network, I put it out there and said, hey, I'm having trouble with a tenant who's not paying. Like, what would you guys do? And right away, someone said, there's a rental assistance program in Connecticut. You should apply and work with the tenant. And we got paid out 4 months of advance rent. And at the end of that 4 months, I worked with her that case. And she left on month 4. So everything worked out.
Did you have an agreement for that where she knew that she was going to be leaving at the end of 4 months? Or is that something you guys had worked out at that the end of those 4 months?
It was a whole situation. And this is where I'm glancing over what really went on. But it was... I would say it was a bit of me pushing in a nice way, like, all right, you can't afford to live here, bad things may happen to you if you stay, not physically, but you know, like I may have to evict you
with an eviction,
like, yeah. So she had a social worker, so I started working with the social worker to kind of see what route we can go to get her out. Are there any programs for people having these issues that she was having? And month 4 she just said, I'm leaving. And I was like, holy crap. I don't know like exactly what I did, but I think just the continuing conversation, if I had just let it go and not said anything for 4 months, then we definitely would have been sitting here. I don't know if I that's one of the things that make you quit landlording. it was rough, but it all worked out.
The dream of owning a vacation home can be daunting, from finding the best guests, to the maintenance, to organizing the cleaners after every guest day. With Vacasa, they make that dream into a reality. As a full-service vacation home management company with vacation homes in key destinations across the U.S., they know a thing about how to make owning a vacation home easy and profitable. On top of proactive property maintenance visits by professional local teams, a hospitality-driven booking platform, and around-the-clock support, Vacasa earns homeowners an average of 20% more revenue from their vacation homes. Vacasa is always thinking of ways to simplify the vacation home owning experience by putting your home to work for you. If you're looking to make more from your vacation home, work with the reliable property manager, and finally have peace of mind, partner with Vacasa at vacasa.com/biggerpockets. That's vacasa.com/biggerpockets. This show is sponsored by Airbnb. Did you know that a long time ago, before I ever started my real estate business, I turned one of my first primary residences into an Airbnb? And that's the extra income that I needed from Airbnb that gave me the confidence to go out and work for myself and eventually quit my 9-to-5 job. And now I have dozens of Airbnbs all over the country. I've even partnered up with the old David Green on a recent property in Scottsdale to take our portfolio to the next level. And of course, we host it on Airbnb. But you don't need to be a full-time real estate investor to start on Airbnb. As a matter of fact, I was self-managing 10 properties while working my 9-to-5 job, so I know anybody can do it. Think about it this way. You're looking for extra income and going on a vacation. Wouldn't it be great to rent out your space and let your property pay for itself while you're gone? I did this one time. I pitched my wife and my roommate, because we were house hacking, on the idea of renting out our home, and it paid for all of our expenses on a trip to Mexico City. So go and give it a try. It might just change your life, just like it did mine. And I really do mean that. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Rookies, 2024 is the year to start protecting your rental properties with an LLC. But you don't have to do all the paperwork and filing yourself. Corporate Direct is your professional and affordable option for getting your LLC done right. They handle the state filings, draft your operating agreement, and act as your registered agent. They'll even help you comply with the Corporate Transparency Act, a new federal disclosure law affecting every real estate investor. Corporate Direct is a family business founded by attorney, author, and rich dad advisor Garrett Sutton over 35 years ago. Now, his son Ted is a licensed attorney working with him. Together, they've helped thousands of real estate investors form and maintain their LLCs and protect their assets. If you're trying to build a real estate portfolio, do not skip the LLC. Head over to corporatedirect.com/biggerpockets to schedule a free 15-minute consultation with an incorporating specialist. Mention Real Estate Rookie and get a $100 discount on your formation. That's corporatedirect.com/biggerpockets. Ashley, I want to ask you, I know we've chatted about this on the show before, but how did any of your tenants stop paying during COVID?
Oh yeah, I had a couple, and then the other investor that I do asset management for, he did. But the same thing, our property management company applied for these kind of rental assistance programs that were available because of COVID. The problem was that they only paid back rent, and it was, you know, you had to apply and then you wouldn't get funded for 3 months. So by that time, another 3 months had gone by of them not paying rent. And then we've gotten paid for the people that haven't paid, but then, you know, the whole thing would start again. And I think there's been like two programs that have come out. So I've gotten like two lump sum payments from each of these programs, but there has been one tenant that hasn't paid since March 2020 and has been relying on these programs. And so we're actually in the middle of the eviction for them finally, because it's only maybe been 6 months since evictions have been allowed in New York State. So just like a huge backlog of evictions that are being processed.
Man, yeah, I had to evict all of my short-term rental tenants too. So I totally feel you.
Oh, damn the heart.
Wait, so Brandon, I want to go back to your deal. So if we can finish things off here, so I want to talk through the numbers just a little bit. So you initially bought it with three units.
Correct.
You were living in one of them.
Correct.
You were profiting like $82 a month.
Yes.
What does that property look like now that you've moved on to your second house hack?
Yeah, sure. So since then, you know, obviously COVID has resulted in rent increases. You know, we have paying tenants now, good paying tenants in that property. So now I would say the true net after expenses on that property, we probably pull about $900 to $1,000 a month. after all expenses. You know, net is hard to explain because when you get into real estate, you realize like you have your up months, you have your down months, and that number fluctuate. But yeah, I say roughly around $1,000 is what it's netting.
That's awesome. Yeah. Great job on that.
Yeah, I'm trying to do the math really quickly. So if you're say you're netting even on the low end, $900 a month, and you do that over 12 months, that's about almost $11,000. And you said you put down what 20% on this property?
Yes, I believe it was around 60 something.
So divide that by 60, and you're at like almost a 20% cash on cash return, which is phenomenal,
yeah.
Right? For a long term rental. So congratulations, man. That's amazing.
Yeah. Thank you. I didn't expect that, but, things just worked out. It's just how to go.
So if I can ask one follow-up question to that. So for the house hack that you're in right now, is that one the three plex or the fourplex?
Four family.
So that one's a four family. So can you just really quickly walk through the numbers on that one? Like how much do you think you'll cash flow on that property per month?
Yeah, sure. So this one somebody in my RIA mentioned, I want unititis. And it basically means don't rush to get units, which is what we did to this property. So long story short, we paid, I want to say about $425 on this property. On this one, we do not necessarily live for, I guess you could say live for free, but we still really truly factor in expenses. So we're paying a couple of $100 out of pocket on this property. But it's a much more expensive property in a much better neighborhood than where we were before. So with better neighborhoods comes more expensive properties. But yeah, that's where we are right now.
What would your unit rent for? So if you were going to rent the unit you're living in right now, what would it rent for?
I would say somewhere between $1,200 to $1,300 a month.
And you're living there for a couple hundred.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And in the end, to be honest, like the other units still, they kind of cover that rent anyway. So, but we still pay it because it's numbers. I'm very like black and white, like. This is what this property demands. This is what we must pay. I don't care about how the other properties are performing, but it all works out.
Do you have a certain like buy box or criteria for the properties that you're purchasing?
It's changed since we first started. When we first started, it was all cash flow. Yeah. We want cash flow. But as I become a seasoned investor or learning, you know, we're thinking more of the big picture, long term. So for us, it's more of being able to acquire properties for little to no down money. And I would prefer a more turnkey property that doesn't need a ton of repairs. The cash flow may not be there now on them, but again, I'm thinking 10 years from now, honestly, with everything that we purchase, you know, we put ourselves in a place where our living expenses are so low that we don't need to chase after a ton of cash flow. Would it be nice? Definitely. But I'm more concerned with just acquiring properties over the next 10, 15 years.
I want to take us to our mindset segment, Brandon. So are there any expectations you had getting into real estate that now that you are an investor, you realize are not even reality?
Yes, I would say, I don't know if it's necessarily mindset, but cash flow. It's not what you think it is. As a beginning investor, especially buying older properties, you realize that a lot of that is absorbed through old property stuff, old pipes, leaky roofs, all that stuff. So I would say cash flow is definitely one of those things that it's not as real as it seems, you know. So just be careful getting into real estate thinking that you're going to cash flow significantly, because you may not when you really factor in the true cost of ownership of a property.
That's such a good point.
Yeah.
I completely agree with you. Yeah.
All right, Brandon, I want to take us to our next segment, which is our rookie request line. So for all of you that are listening, if you'd like to get your question featured on the show, you can give us a call at 888-5-ROOKIE and we might pick your question for the show. So Brandon, are you ready for today's question?
I'm ready.
So today's question is from Alex, who's in the San Francisco Bay Area. And Alex says, I have about $350,000 for a down payment for a small multifamily, which is barely enough to really even cover a down payment in the Bay Area. I was thinking about house hacking, but my question is, should I go that route and find something to house hack here in the Bay Area, or maybe go a cheaper route and rent and use that money to invest out of state where my money might go a little further? Thank you so much. What are your thoughts on that, Brandon?
Good question. I would say do both. To be honest, it's very feasible to do both. Assuming this is his first purchase, buy a house hack, you know, with a low down payment. lower your expenses. You know, forget, don't start with trying to acquire, you know, 100 units. Start by lowering your expenses, your living expenses, and then go from there. Because at that point, you have a property. You are an investor. It's not like you're just doing it and lowering expenses. It's two-sided. You save expenses and you get the and you get a property, whether it's a single or a multifamily. And then from there, you can then save all that money you were paying in rent or in a mortgage and then reinvest that somewhere else into another state. So at least in the meantime, you're living for cheap while you're banking so much more than you would if you weren't. And then give yourself 6 months, a year, come up with your future plan, and then buy property out of state.
Yeah, I think, Brendan, you have a very valid point, is it doesn't mean that you can't do both, maybe just doing one first and then the other. And, you know, either one you do will be a good opportunity for you to get into the next one. And I think that, Alex, you should look at the numbers on each of these scenarios. So if you do a house hack, how much will you be saving compared to paying rent? And then also look at, if you buy out of state, how much cash flow are you going to get? So which number is higher? Are you going to be saving, you know, $2,000 a month if you house hack, but are you going to be making $2,000 a month in cash flow if you buy an out-of-state property with that same dollar amount? So I think look at those scenarios too. And if you get appreciation, take that into factor too. And, you know, the Bay Area, you may get more appreciation than if you're going and buying these cash flowing duplexes in Detroit too. So I think it's important to not just take into account the cash flow, but also appreciation too. Okay, Brendan, now onto the toughest part of the interview, the rookie exam.
Right.
What is one actionable thing rookies should do after listening to this episode?
I would say if you currently don't have a property and you're a rookie, you have nothing yet, think about what your life would look like if you didn't have to pay your current rent, or if you do have a property, a single family, a mortgage. What would your life look like? How much more would that add on to what's possible for you? And then take action from there. You know, really just explore your finances after that and see, you know, how much of a difference it would make. It would allow you to buy that first investment property, just like we just talked about. It would allow for a lot. Even if you don't want to move so fast, it would just free you up and allow for mental freedom to think about your next step. So, yeah.
Next question for you, Brendan. What is one tool, software, app, or system that you use in your business?
My wife and I, we use TenantCloud for our property management currently.
Okay. And where do you plan on being in 5 years?
That is a good question. I would say... we may be in a single family. I'm not sure yet. My life is so dynamic. I just kind of go with the flow at this point. Still acquiring properties. We may not necessarily be in the multifamily space because as I'm learning, there's multiple streams of different types of income you can have. So definitely being in a place of multiple streams of income. You know, we're exploring the Airbnb route now for our next house hack. So we'll see how that goes. If we enjoy that, we may go that route. So I'd say... having at least 2 to 3 streams of income is kind of where we want to head moving forward into the future.
That's awesome. And I don't think we asked this, but is your wife in a W-2 job right now?
She still is. Yes, working? She still is.
Yeah. So maybe she's the next one.
I'm telling her, like,
you could have her job in 5 years. Yeah,
definitely. For sure. For sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Awesome. Okay. Well, before we end the show, I want to give a shout out to this week's rookie rock star, who is Ryan Burnham. He just closed on a fourplex in Minnesota on Friday. It is house hack number 2, 3.5% down for the down payment at 4.625% on the mortgage. And the total income is going to be $2,680 to $2,700 monthly, and that includes the coin-operated laundry that is on-premise. So Ryan said, living almost for free in one of the units. Congratulations, Ryan. That's really awesome, and thank you so much for sharing. If you guys want to be featured as our rookie rock star, make sure you join our Real Estate Rookie Facebook group and leave your win for us on there. Or you can also message Tony or I on Instagram at Wealth for Rentals or at Tony J. Robinson. So Brendan, thank you so much. We've appreciated you coming on here and sharing your house hacking journey. Can you please let everyone know where they can reach out to you and find out some more information about you?
Sure. I would say the best place to reach me is probably Facebook. I believe my tag is a Rush DPI. R-U-S-H, D as in dog, P as in Paul, I as in the letter I. Yeah, just hit me there. My website is DartmouthPI, as in Paul and I again, .com. So DartmouthPI.com, and you can message me through there. And that's probably it.
Okay, well, thank you so much. We really enjoyed having you, and we can't wait to see your journey across the next 5 years and beyond. So thank you for joining us. I'm Ashley at Wealth From Rentals, and he's Tony at Tony J. Robinson on Instagram. And we will be back on Saturday with a rookie reply. If you guys love this episode, please leave us a 5-star review on your favorite podcast platform. And we'll see you guys next time. The market is changing and finding your way can be tricky. Rates shift, headlines whirl, but your goal hasn't changed. You want financial freedom. And the best investors know it's not about timing the market, it's about time in the market. If you're ready to get into the real estate investing game or take your game to the next level, finding an investor-friendly agent is your next step. With BiggerPockets Agent Finder, you can find the right agent in minutes. Just head to biggerpockets.com/deals. Enter a few details about what and where you want to buy, and boom, instantly match with an investor-friendly agent who fits the bill. These local market experts can help you navigate the neighborhoods, analyze the numbers, and take action with confidence once and for all. There's free resources only available at biggerpockets.com/deals. Get an agent, get the deal, and get closer to financial freedom at biggerpockets.com/deals. That's biggerpockets.com/deals to find your investor-friendly agent today. The content of this podcast is for informational purposes only.
Past performance is not indicative of future results, and all host and participant opinions are their own.
Investment in any asset, real estate included, involves risk. Use your best judgment and consult with qualified advisors before investing. Only risk capital you can afford to lose.
Bigger Pockets LLC disclaims all liability for direct, indirect, consequential, or other damages arising from reliance upon information presented in this podcast.